G'day, Reece Dowden here, and welcome to episode 35 of the Selection Bullet Points podcast. And as always, if you're going to be doing selection, make sure you check out operatoredge.com/selection, and you'll find a number of resources there in regards to what I can do to help you prepare for selection. I'm actually running a great offer for my Indefatigable Selection Prep course at the minute. It's going to be running till next Friday, 29th of April, and I've got a massive prize pool. Couple of giveaways there. So make sure you check that out, all right? So head to operatoredge.com/selection and you'll see all the relevant links there. Let's get into today's podcast. I've got a number of questions that have been sent in over the last month or so, probably since I did the last podcast. I've been away a little bit, helped doing some courses, run some courses for the military with kinetic fighting. A few other things, but back into it now, and let's get into some of the questions. Got quite a few to go through. First one being, is it better to attempt selection as an officer or as a soldier? Interesting question. I'd say it's easier as a soldier to do selection. As an officer, you've got a little bit extra that you got to do in regards to officer modules, about 5 days worth at the start of selection before selection proper starts, where you're doing your QDEs or your quick decision exercises, your CHUTs, which is tactical exercises without troops. I think that's what it stands for, and a few other things. And as an officer, yeah, you're really under the pump. You know, you have to be right up there in everything you do. Obviously fitness, obviously leadership. And you grilled a lot more, okay? So you can't sort of be underdone or have any weaknesses there. So it's probably easier as a soldier. Which is better? Yeah, it really depends on what you want out of your career in SF. We need good officers in SF. We need good officers in the military, really. But as an officer, you know, once you kind of do your years as a platoon commander, which you might get 2, maybe 3. As a platoon commander, after which you sort of you're more in a planning role and more of that officer role, not so much kicking indoors. So if your idea of fun is more about kicking indoors and pulling the trigger and blowing things up, I'd go as a soldier, all right? Because that's what you do your whole career, all right? So you can spend many more years doing that. And like I said, it just depends on what you want to achieve within your, within the military in general and in SF. Point to note, you can always join as a soldier and then become an officer. You can't do that the other way around, okay? If you join as an officer, you can't then go back to a soldier, okay? So that's one point. Actually, officers, in my experience, probably better, the ones that have come through the soldier pathway initially, so they've done their time as a soldier and then become an officer, but that's my personal opinion. So just remember that. That's a big one, all right? You can always go from soldier to officer. You can't go the other way around. Number 2, do you know if either SAS commanders are getting any combat deployments at the moment or in the near future? A lot of work has dried up after the withdrawal of Afghanistan, but are they likely to get any type of combat deployments going forward? He also says that I've heard there's a bit of stuff happening in parts of Africa regarding ISIS. Do you know if RSF are getting involved with that effort at all or anything like that? I couldn't tell you that. I don't ask. You know, they don't tell. It'd be highly unprofessional for me to ask and then for the guys to tell, you know. It actually would be illegal for them to tell me. But the thing with it, even though there's not a declared war, if, Afghanistan's finished, Iraq's finished, really. SF lads aren't on the ground in sort of a declared war fighting sort of bigger battles. There's always something going on, all right? If you don't hear about it, there's always something the SF boys are doing, okay? So if you want to be in that environment, sort of boots on the ground being deployed, the best chance you have of doing that is in SF, all right? SF are always going to get the first opportunity to those types of roles and tasks, even if you don't hear about it, all right? So I'm sure there's a lot of things going on. And even outside that, I mean, just look at everything else SF has to offer in regards to the skill sets, the opportunities you get working with different soft units, doing different engagement training exercises around the world. So, you know, it all adds up. SF is by far the best fucking way to go there. Question number three. So I got a question from one of the guys. I think he's in my program, Navy guy. He said a bit of his background is that he's in training in the Navy. I think he's a technician and he's going to complete his training early 2023. All right. And he wants to put his application in to transfer to commanders as soon as he can in 2023. His question is, how soon can and should I put in my application? And by this point, he says he's undergone nearly 2 years of technical training in the Navy. All right. So if you've just done, you know, if you just, once you do all your training and whatever it is, so it's 2-3 years, whatever your training is, and then you get posted outside of the school to a unit or to a ship, yeah, turning around and then saying to you, oh, I'm going to do selection this year, it's highly unlikely that they'll approve it, okay? Because remember, you have to get your command approval, chain of command's approval to do selection. So if you just rock up, you've done two or three years of training, and you get there and within a month you put in your SF app, they're probably going to say no, all right? And SOCOM aren't going to be able to probably do much about that. So you're probably going to have to spend, you know, a couple of years doing your trade before you can apply, before you get your approval from your chain of command. If you're continually, so you say you've done a couple of years, 2, 3, 4 years, and you kept getting the knockback, and your chain of command were saying all sorts of crazy shit, like, you know, we need you, this is a job that is undermanned and it's critical trade and we need you, and they kept knocking you back, you could contact SOCOM and they could do something about it, okay? Because SOCOM is priority. It's priority trade, and people who want to do selection have the right to do that, okay? But putting in straight after you get out of training, I don't think you'll get it, all right? So you'll probably have to do a couple of years in your role as a tech before you can request to do selection, all right? And his other question was, if I fail selection, will they send me back to Navy to continue my role, or will I now be Army and take on a new role? No, if you fail selection, go straight back to the Navy, all right? You're only in the Army, or you will be in the Army if you finish selection and then you complete Rio, okay? That's when you'll be in the Army, okay? And then you'll transfer across then. Not before, because a lot of people fail the reinforcement cycle, all right? If you fail the Rio cycle, they'll send you straight back to the Navy, okay? Next question. What happens if you finish selection as a reservist recruit but you don't pass? Let's say they invite you back the following year. Do you become a reservist until then, or can they invite you to stay at School of Special Operations? Would you be sent back to your normal life as a reservist and be able to come into ADF SSO if and when you choose? All right. So if you're a reservist and you fail selection, or if you finish selection and you don't pass, whatever the case may be, they'll send you straight back to your reserve unit, all right? You're not going to be hanging around the School of Special Operations. The only reason you're going to be around the School of Special Operations is either you pass and you're on Rio, or you're in the direct recruiting scheme, okay? So straight back to your reserve unit until you decide if and when you're going to have another go. Next question, with regards to DRS, if you fail selection, do you really get slotted into an infantry unit thereafter? I think I heard somewhere you said they've been given, they've had options to leave if they wish to do so. Yeah, this is something that I came across recently, talking to a random guy in the gym actually, who was part of the DRS pathway. And he said, yeah, that's what they're doing, that DRS guys sign up for DRS. And that if they don't get through selection, they can leave the Army, all right? Or they can transfer to, you know, another role in the military, or they can go, you know, get sent to an infantry unit. While that sounds good, I wouldn't necessarily trust that. You know, if you sign up for DRS, the standard for years, it was just if you sign up for DRS, that's it, you're doing your 4 years, okay? Unless you get injured, you can leave it sort of Kapuka. But after that, you're in, okay? So if they've already trained you at Kapuka, they've trained you as a grunt, IOTs, and then you go into fail selection, I can't see them. I know of guys that have transferred over to different roles, but I wouldn't bank on that, okay? And I wouldn't bank on leaving the military either, okay? I think you're going to be in for your 4 years, okay? Don't quote me on that. That's what I've heard. But really, what are you signing up for, right? If you decide to go DRS, you want to go SF, you want to be in the army. If you don't get through first go, you don't want to just, you know, throw your toys on the ground and say, fuck this, I'm out. All right. Take it on the chin, learn from it, and try again. And that might mean that you can either stay within school special operations and try it next year or go an infantry unit. That's up to you. If it was me and I had the opportunity and I failed selection first go, I'd probably stay in and around Sydney at the school special operations and go again rather than go to an infantry unit. But that's just me. Like I said, you're signing up. If you don't get through first go, too fucking bad. Don't call it quits then. Go again next year, right? I'd say most guys do take more than one go to get in, okay? Next question, can you give me some advice on your thoughts on some pros and cons of going DRS as opposed to A-res? And he says he's listened to my last podcast, RA versus A-res, and wanted some comparisons to DRS. Basically, both pathways are tough, all right? Any pathway through to selection is tough, right? And really not many get through DRS. Or DRS scheme pathway, because it's fucking hard. Selection is fucking hard, right? But I would say A-res is better if you got a good civvy job, all right? Because that'll give you time to train. If you've got a good civvy job, if you don't hate your civvy job, you're not trying to get away from anything, you could definitely stay there, especially if you're a little bit older. You could definitely stay there, join reserves, do, you know, minimum time, 18 months, 2 years, and do selection. It's probably going to be work out the same time as going DRS. Right, but if you're maybe a little bit younger, relatively sort of 22 and above, you don't have a great civvy job or you don't really have anything holding you back, I'd go DRS for sure. All right, so either way, you're probably looking at DRS, your 12 to 18 months to do selection if you're on the DRS, A-res, 18 months to 2 years, okay, by the time you get your training done. So it really depends on your situation right now, how old you are, what your life situation is in regards to the job role that you're doing. Like I said, those are the two bits of advice that I would give. If you like what you're doing, you've got a good civvy job, you're not in a rush, you don't want to get away from anything, and if you're a little bit older, I'd probably go A-res. Other than that, I'd go DRS. Okay, next question. I've got the physical benchmarks dialed in. I've done the NAV course, civvy NAV course through Wayfinder. I've been studying the written exam for SFET, got the knots down pat, weapon handling standards, and will continue to study the Operator Edge course or my Indefatigable course. This is obviously a guy in my program. Given my limited practical implementation of infantry skills, I was told that if I perform to a low standard, I run the risk of being told don't come back, so best to wait until next year. Considering applicants come from DRS and non-combat roles, I can't imagine I would be further behind in any of these practical skills. Okay, this guy says he's pretty confident and competitive applicant currently, and if he was to fail to pass, you know, he would take it as a valuable learning experience for his next attempt. His question is it a legitimate possibility that failure to perform could result in a don't bother applying again? Okay, so not recommended to reapply. It's probably, in my experience, it's rare that people get that. You know, if you have everything of those covered, like this guy just said, so if your soldier skills are down pat or you've got them covered in regards to your infantry minor tactics, in regards to your navigation, your weapons, your first aid, your RATEL, your all arms call for fire, that kind of thing, and then you're good at working with heights, you're good in the pool, your physical components are covered, if you're a good person, if you're a good dude, if you can work in the teams well, or a team be part of a team, is a good team member, if you can do that really well and you know you can, or you've proven it, and you know you feel confident that you've done all the training mentally, that you've got stress management strategies down pat, emotionally intelligence, you've looked into that and you feel quite confident, I would go for it, all right? If you rock up and you know the standards and you've got them covered, you shouldn't get a recommendation to not reapply if you failed for whatever reason, okay? But if you rocked up to selection and your all arms call for fire is shit, your minimi is poor, all right? You don't know how to use a stire, you don't know how to give a target indication, All right. You're barely passing the 3.2 and the 20 clicker. You can't nav. That all adds up. So if as an instructor, you can see all the group of instructors can see that this, that you've rocked up and you haven't prepared at all, and you are below standard on a number of different activities, you're probably not going to get a recommendation to come back. All right. However, if you do well and you've got all these covered and something just doesn't go your way, i.e. you might fail the 3.2 or you might fail the 20 clicker, all right? So it might be, or you might not be great at working with hides, or you just might have a bad day, but you've performed in a lot of the other areas, you should get a recommendation to come back, okay? So I would say it's reasonably, not rare, but getting a recommendation not to come back, it doesn't happen all that often, okay? Most dudes, in my experience, will get a recommendation to come back if you've shown that you're professional, if you've done the work, you've put in the time, and you rock up to selection ready, all right? So if you feel you are ready, fucking go for it. Don't just put it off because somebody has told you that, you know, oh, you might get a don't bother applying again, not getting a recommendation. You know, that's just bullshit fear, people putting fear into your head. It's the haters, you know, knowing that they could never fucking do it. So they're just trying to convince you not to do it as well. So yeah, if you feel like you're ready, go for it. All right, go for it. Next one, I've heard at the start of command selection they take your strapping tape off you so you're all on a level playing field. Is this the case, or can you take foot care kit with you? In my experience, you can take it with you. I have heard that they've taken things like bike pants and strapping tape off people. But the thing is with that too, the medics are there, all right? So if they take that off you, you can get it from the medics, all right? So this is a pretty interesting point. The medics are there to help you. They'll never stop you going to the medic. So if you need your feet strapped, need anything looked at, they will get, every single day you'll be able to do that, all right? So if they take your strapping tape off you, who gives a fuck, all right? Just get the medics to strap your feet. You just want to know how to strap it, where you want to strap it, so they don't go overboard, because sometimes the medics can get overzealous and strap your fucking feet up and put way too much strapping tape on it, and it can cause more issues, right? So know how you want to have your feet strapped, where you want to strap it. Generally, it's just one or two bits of tape over those areas that it rubs, and you'll be fine, okay? But the biggest point is there is that the medics are there for you. They want you to use the medics, right? They can't stop you using the medics, and you'll every single day you'll get a chance to use the medics. Anytime you need to, you can say you need to see the medic, all right? And utilize that, all right? Because that may be the difference between you getting in or passing selection and not. You don't want to wait till, you know, and the little niggle turns into a massive issue when you could have got it sorted straight away, all right? So the medics are there, use them. And one last question I had was on training up for the pack marching, all right? Some tips for training up for pack marching. What I would say with that, and what I find, especially guys in my course, and I bang on about it, is that dudes go too hard too early, all right? So dudes who have never done any pack marching, they'll put, you know, 40 kilos in their fucking pack and try and stomp for 3 hours, all right? You are going to break yourself. So the most important thing with pack marching is to do it slow. So go for a pack march, put just the pack on your back initially, or put 5 kilos or 10 kilos. Don't put a lot in it, and then start slow, all right? So go for 30 minutes, all right? And from there, you can build up. Next one, you might go for 45 minutes and then an hour and build up from there. And you can add weight as well, but I would increase either time or increase weight. Probably don't do both, and just build it up over time. Probably just start with once a week. And when you do that, you're going to give your body time to get used to it, okay? And you're also going to start to learn what rubs, where, getting your pack sorted in regards to where you want to store the weight, working out what pack is actually good for you or not. So you want to get a good pack, and I would advise a pack with a frame, so some kind of Alice frame pack, because they're probably the best for your back. And just start slow. Work out where your feet need to take, where you need to tape your feet and what parts, have good boots, and allow your body to get conditioned to it. The other thing you want to start to take note of is when you're pushing above the 2 hour period, you're going to want to take food, all right? So that's really important as well. Understand how much you need to consume carbohydrate-wise, which is sort of 30 to 60 grams per hour, especially when you're doing over 2 hours, and how much fluid you need to consume as well. So in a hard pack march, if you're doing a 20 clicker, most likely you're going to be up around a liter an hour. All right. So when you're just starting out, you're not going to need a whole lot of water, but you want to start working that out, start to delve into and start understanding all these components of pack marching. All right. But the biggest thing is don't go over the top, okay? Don't slap on fucking a pack with 40 kilos and try and hump 20 kilometers, okay? You might do it, all right? You might do it, but you might break yourself as well, all right? If you've got plenty of time, if you're just starting out, take your time, build slowly, condition slowly, allow your body to adapt, and then you're going to give yourself increase your chances of not getting injured and learning a lot about your body and how it's going to respond in all those different ways in regards to back marching, okay? That's probably my biggest advice there. All right, so that's it for this podcast. Number of different questions asked and answered. Again, make sure you check out Operator Reg's 6th birthday package that I've got going on my ordeal I got going for my Indefatigable course, and I've got 3 big prize pools that I'm giving away as well. So want to check that out, go to operatoredge.com/selection and there'll be a link at the top where you can check out all of that information as well as a number of other free resources there. All right. Hope you got a lot out of this episode of the podcast. If you have any questions, make sure you hit me up. Email is probably the best, reese@operatoredge.com. Or you could send me a Facebook message, or you could send me an Instagram message, reese_Dowden. All right. But again, email is the best. Okay, that's it for this podcast, and I'll see you in the next one. Thanks.